Over the last 2 weeks, we have made historic strides in reasserting American leadership, restoring American security, and reawakening American confidence.
The U.S. president gives himself a pat on the back for his just-concluded Asian journey. This is Thursday, the 16th of November, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, China is sending a representative to Pyongyang for new talks with North Korea. The U.S. Secretary of State pays a visit to Myanmar, the topic, the Rohingyas. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump Wednesday warned North Korea that the world will not tolerate what he called its nuclear blackmail, vowing an international campaign of maximum pressure on Pyongyang, including by China. It was all part of a White House speech delivered after Mr. Trump returned home from his marathon trip.
This is our beautiful vision for the future. This is a future where this vision, this dream, is only possible if America is strong, proud, and free.
Joining us now is VOA White House correspondent Pete Heinlein. Pete, give us a wrap-up of the president's speech, if you will.
During a 22-minute nationally televised speech from the diplomatic room in the White House, President Trump touted the successes he has achieved during this five-nation, 12-day trip to Asia. Speaking in an address that was carried live on the cable news networks, he emphasized especially the success he says he's had in getting together a strong consensus that North Korea needs to be reined in. He said, throughout the trip, we asked all nations to support our campaign of maximum pressure for North Korean denuclearization. And he said, they are responding by cutting trade with North Korea, restricting financial ties to the regime, and expelling North Korean diplomats and workers. He said, over the last 2 weeks that he has made historic strides in reasserting American leadership. He also talked at length about how much has been done on the trade front, saying, we established a new framework for trade that will ensure reciprocity through enforcement actions. He said, they're pushing for reform of international organizations and new trade deals that benefit the United States and partners. He said, this is our vision for the future, a future where which is still only a dream. So it was one of those upbeat speeches. We were expecting news. He, during his trip, said he would make some news when he came back. There wasn't much news in there, but it was mostly just a talk about how well the trip had gone.
VOA White House correspondent Pete Heinlein. Pete, as always, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care, Ira.
These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. President Trump touts his trip to Asia. Three UCLA basketball players return home expressing remorse after their release from China. The South Korea party leader says the U.S. must not strike North Korea without Seoul's consent. U.S. Secretary of State Tillerson makes a stop in Myanmar. And prices of seafood and vegetables are set to rise in Malaysia due to a rainy season. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, on a visit to Myanmar, expressed concern over credible reports of widespread atrocities committed by security forces and vigilantes in Rakhine State, but said broad-based economic sanctions against the country would not be advisable. After announcing that the U.S. will provide an additional $47 million in aid to Rohingya refugees, bringing the total this year to $87 million, Tillerson said, we want to see if Myanmar succeed.
The crisis in Rakhine State is one of the greatest challenges Myanmar has faced since the elected government came into office last year. We're deeply concerned by credible reports of widespread atrocities committed by Myanmar's security forces and by vigilantes who were unrestrained by the security forces during the recent violence in Rakhine State. We're also distressed by the fact that hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children have been forced to flee.
Joining us now is VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. Cindy, with whom did the U.S. Secretary of State meet?
The Secretary met with Myanmar's army chief, and he also met with a state counselor and former opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi. And afterwards, Tillerson had a joint press conference with Aung San Suu Kyi. And he did say that he did not think that broad-based sanctions against the entire country would be helpful at this time, but that the U.S. would consider some individual sanctions against people found responsible for the violence. And he said that he is very concerned about the suffering of the Rohingya people.
What did he say about the phrase being used that's open to question, that being that this whole situation is a case of textbook ethnic cleansing?
Well, he said that basically we're not there yet, that that needs to be studied and considered if that is the case. But he said that the United States does call for an end to the violence and also announced that the U.S. is giving an additional $47 million in humanitarian aid to try and help the refugees. And he also said something that was interesting. He called for the Myanmar government to allow refugees to return, to create safe conditions for their return, including, he said, a pathway to citizenship, which has been a very sore subject because Myanmar has never considered the Rohingya citizens of the country.
Aung San Suu Kyi, the at least civilian leader of Myanmar, has been heavily criticized for her silence or avoidance of controversial issues when speaking about this. What did she have to say?
Well, she was asked about that very point, Ira, and she said that she has not been silent, but that she has been careful about what she said. She said we mustn't forget that there are many different communities in the Rakhine and that they're to live together in peace. We can't set them against each other. She said she's making very careful statements and she doesn't want to drive people farther apart.
Did she give any kind of indication of how she feels about the criticism coming her way and to her country?
Well, she did say that, you know, she rejected the criticism and said that, you know, maybe what she said was not interesting enough or inflammatory enough. She did seem to be a bit sensitive to the criticism, but she said again that it's a very complex problem and a multifaceted problem, and she actually thanked Secretary Tillerson for being open-minded, saying open-mindedness is hard to come by these days.
Tillerson also met with some of the military leadership, correct?
Yes, that's right. He met with the Army chief, and you know, we didn't get an exact readout of what happened there, but he certainly conveyed to them U.S. concerns.
VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain joining us from the State Department. Cindy, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ira.
Happening now in Asia, a senior Chinese diplomat will be visiting North Korea as an envoy of President Xi Jinping. Asian stocks close lower after China data misses forecast. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us here on VOA Asia. Three UCLA basketball players accused of shoplifting in China admitted to the crime and apologized before their coach Steve Alford announced they were being suspended indefinitely. LiAngelo Ball, Jalen Hill, and Cody Riley were described as good young men by Alford at a campus news conference on Wednesday.
These young men are going to have to prove their words and actions that this isn't who they are, and that they will not let their identity be defined by this incident. I know Jello, Cody, and Jalen well, and I'm confident that they have already begun to use this experience as a life lesson. They're going to have to regain the trust of this athletic department, of this university. And because this was such a high-profile international matter, the trust of the general public. Trust is earned. It isn't just given. These three young men will remain suspended indefinitely from our program as we work through the review process with the university's Office of Student Conduct.
The coach said the trio would not be permitted to suit up, practice, or travel with the team while the university continues to sort out the circumstances of last week's incident in Hangzhou, China. Ball, Hill, and Riley took turns admitting to their actions, shoplifting, and apologizing, while also thanking President Donald Trump for intervening on their behalf with his Chinese counterpart. Here's Hill.
I hope that this mistake will not define me as a person, but it shows I have messed up and can learn from it. I don't want to be known for this dumb mistake. I want to be known for my respectfulness and my love and passion for the game of basketball. This event has taught me a lot, and it has changed me in a way that I can't explain.
No questions were taken from the horde of media present in Los Angeles. The players' and coaches' statement were made after President Trump asked Wednesday whether they would thank him for helping secure their release from custody in China after being accused of the shoplifting charges. In a tweet on Wednesday, Trump said the players were headed for 10 years in jail. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Now this news alert from VOA Asia. UCLA players, basketball players, apologized for shoplifting while in China, and they thanked President Trump for helping get them home. Rex Tillerson calls for an independent investigation into Rohingya crisis. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. China is dispatching a senior diplomat, Song Tao, to North Korea Friday to exchange views on matters between the two governments and parties. The Xinhua News Agency didn't indicate whether Pyongyang's nuclear and missile programs would come up in the talks. Tuesday, the UN General Assembly's Human Rights Committee approved a resolution condemning the North for rights violations by neglecting the severe hunger facing its people while pursuing nuclear weapons. Koro Beso is Japan's permanent representative.
Despite the people's need and successive Security Council resolutions, the DPRK authorities continue to divert their resources into pursuing nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles over the welfare of its people. Such a decision itself constitutes a serious human rights violation.
The resolution has 60 co-sponsors and moves on to the full 193-member General Assembly. North Korean diplomat Jo Sung-nam denounced the resolution, accusing the United States and its allies of threats, blackmail, sanctions, and pressure that have cut the delivery of medical equipment and medicine and created obstacles in food production. Troy Stangeron of the Washington-based Korea Economic Institute told VOA's Victor Beatty the resolution follows the Human Rights Council's Commission of Inquiry on North Korea, which in 2014 determined the government was engaged in systemic, widespread, and gross rights violations.
What I think is significant is that each year there seems to be a few more countries that sponsor. I think there's growing awareness around the world that this is a regime that whatever one thinks of it is taking and abusing its population. As we have documentation of forced work. We have documentation of, you know, rape. We have documentation of political prisoners. You know, this is a regime that takes and abuses its people, and it does so for the benefit of the elite, and it's something that I think the world is finally catching up to.
Troy, from your perspective, did President Donald Trump's recent trip to Asia, including a stop in South Korea, make any difference?
I think the trip to South Korea was important. There has been some concern in South Korea that the United States might engage in a military operation without consulting South Korea. One of the things the president made clear when he was there is that he would not, as he said, bypass South Korea. I think it's important to remind everyone that we do need to be on the same page. I think it was good that the president publicly acknowledged that to South Korea, that this is something that directly impacts them and that we both need to be taking each other's concerns into consideration.
Mr. Trump said the North's nuclear and missile programs threaten the world and promised a major statement. In Washington, meanwhile, members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Tuesday considered the president's authority to launch a nuclear strike, given tensions with Pyongyang. Senator Chris Murphy is a Democrat from Connecticut.
We are concerned that the president of the United States is so unstable, is so volatile, has a decision-making process that is so quixotic, that he might order a nuclear weapons strike that is wildly out of step with U.S. national security interests.
Retired Air Force General Robert Kaler, the former commander of U.S. Strategic Command, said the military does not blindly follow orders, that a presidential order must be legal. Retired Air Force Colonel Cedric Layton, who now operates his own consultancy, was asked what is considered an illegal order.
An order that would be immoral, that would violate the rules of war, that would be, for example, an order that would violate the rules of proportionality. For example, if there were an attack on United States forces using small arms fire and the response was a nuclear attack against that, that would violate the laws of proportionality. So if something like that were to happen, then the members of the military that are on the receiving end of those orders would have every right to refuse to execute that order.
From your vantage point and your military service, would you say that nuclear weapons would be part of a U.S. response to an imminent North Korean threat?
The use of nuclear weapons could potentially be a response to an imminent North Korean threat or a threat from any other country, but it is something that has only been theorized. It has never been put into practice, and war plans that are used to cover the North Korean scenarios that we've become familiar with in the military do not contemplate going after the North Koreans with a full-blown nuclear response.
Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio warned his colleagues to tread lightly, saying America's allies and adversaries are watching very closely. Now this news alert from VOA Asia. The North Korean soldier is in critical condition after being shot multiple times in a defection attempt. Afghanistan's opium crop hits a new record level. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now on VOA Asia. Critics are accusing President Trump of abandoning America's principles of human rights and press freedom during his just-completed trip to Asia. In separate critiques, Human Rights Watch and Reporters Without Borders charged Trump with effectively condoning rights abuses and anti-press practices of some of Asia's most notorious authoritarian regimes. The Human Rights Watch Asia director, Brad Adams, told VOA the United States' voice on human rights has basically disappeared. President Trump is providing the region's authoritarian leaders with a blank check, added Daniel Bostard, the head of Reporters Without Borders' Asia Pacific desk. The Press Freedom Group criticized Trump for allowing Chinese President Xi Jinping to prohibit reporters' questions during what was billed as a joint press conference during the meeting in Beijing. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters the question and answer session had been canceled at the insistence of Chinese. In a statement, Reporters Without Borders noted that then-President Barack Obama also had been heavily criticized for not allowing questions on his first trip to Beijing in 29, but he convinced the Chinese press secretary to take questions when he returned 5 years later. White House officials did not immediately respond to a VOA request for a response to the criticisms, but on the flight home, President Trump defended his strategy of building personal relationships with leaders such as China's Xi, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, and Vietnamese Prime Minister Nguyen Xuan Phuc. Trump pointed out that improvised ties had enabled progress on issues such as reining in North Korea's nuclear ambitions, helping to win freedom for several U.S. college basketball players accused of shoplifting in China. This is VOA Asia. Millions of Americans feed wild birds flying over the backyards, from cardinals and English sparrows to blue jays and doves. Making seeds available attracts more birds and gives feeders a chance to enjoy watching and maybe counting them. But it also helps the birds, whether they're native or just passing through, survive amid the growing urban sprawl. Faiza Al-Masri has the story, which Faith Lapidus narrates.
Sumner Askins started feeding birds just a few years ago when he was in college majoring in wildlife science.
I had just taken this class, ornithology, the study of birds, and I was just super into it. And I got one feeder and I put it all the way up in this tree. I probably climbed like 30 feet so I could hang it right outside my window. And I got some cool stuff and I just wanted to keep going with it to see what else I could get.
He got lots of birds. Downy woodpeckers, northern cardinals, mourning doves, house sparrows, hummingbirds, and many others. And watching them was a learning experience.
You learn just how each species is designed differently, like the way their toes are shaped so they can grip things differently and climb. You see the individuality of each of them. Like the little invasive species around here, like the house sparrow and the European starling, just have a little disdain for them, you know, so they chase around the other guys. Some people don't like the big blue jays because they're loud, but I like them a lot. They're just big.
Askin uses a variety of feeders to make it more adventurous for the birds.
Most birds, like a small sparrow, can't exactly stand on the side of a tree like a woodpecker can, you know, because it gets its toes in there and it just climbs up. The low-hanging finch feeder over there, a normal feeder, they sit on it and they turn sideways and they eat. But that one, they have to hang upside down. So you watch them just pivot completely upside down, and only two species can do that. So it's just for them instead of the non-native sparrows.
Askin spends about $100 a month buying bird seed. He shops at Wild Birds Unlimited, a store that sells seeds and feeders and where he has a part-time job. Wild Birds Unlimited owner Michael Zeiker has run the business for 26 years. He says some 53 million Americans enjoy the hobby.
Well, gardening's the first. Backyard bird feeding second, and they pretty much blend into each other. We spend a lot of time, too, also with the schools, because a lot of school teachers have programs, and they've set up habitats in their schools to teach the young kids about the birds, the species, the nesting, and how to attract them.
Zeiker says people like to feed and watch wild birds for many reasons.
I think one of the most important reasons is it's a very, very peaceful, emotional experience. You put the food out there, you spend time on your deck in the nice weather. In the winter, you're indoors watching the birds, and you never know what's going to show up. Most of the yards around here can easily get 30 different species of birds in their backyard.
Paul Starzynski agrees. He picked up the hobby after retiring 3 years ago.
And if you sit quietly, they come real close, and you don't bother them, and you can watch them. You can even see the little seed in their beak before they swallow it. It's kind of fun. Besides, I like them fly over my head, and I would be alone out there if I didn't have the birds.
Other birders take the hobby to another level.
My neighbor, who's a real birder, he knows everything. I don't. He found 13 species over by lunch in the backyard. Now, some of them just look all the same to me, but he knows the difference between that one and that one.
Even without knowing the bird species or where they come from, Paul Starzynski loves his new hobby. He's just one of millions of Americans who enjoy the colorful beauty and songs the feathered visitors bring to their backyards. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
A story now from Afghanistan saying that Afghanistan has produced a record 9,000 metric tons of opium this year, up 87% compared with 2016 levels. The sharp increase is recorded in a new joint survey released Wednesday by the Afghan Ministry of Counter-Narcotics and the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. The production in 2016 stood up 4,800 metric tons in Afghanistan, the world's top cultivator of the poppy from which opium and heroin are produced. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Let's hear from you at VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our engineer, Rob McLean, and our director, Tracy Carter. Have a wonderful day.